Hello and welcome. This is the CenturyLink Labs podcast brought to you by CenturyLink and CenturyLink Cloud. Today I am very excited to be interviewing Matt Butcher about how he uses Docker. So this is a real world use case of somebody using Docker to get stuff done. I'm very, very excited about it. And Matt is such a great guy. He is a senior software developer and an author. He's written a lot of books, and I've written a couple books, so I know how hard it is. It's amazing. This guy is a machine. He's written Drupal 7 Module Development, Mastering Open LDAP, Learning Drupal 6, Managing Custom OpenCMS, Building Websites with OpenCMS, and Drupal 6 JavaScript and jQuery. I could go on about this guy, but I just want to let him tell you a little bit about himself, and then we'll start talking Docker.
All right. Yeah, we're actually working on another book on Go in the Cloud right now. So that'll actually, this is the first time I've talked about it in public. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'll be writing that with Matt Farina. But yeah, so I'm the lead cloud engineer at Revolve. And Revolve is a company doing what I'm most excited right now about, which is Internet of Things, and we're building a hub that can, you know, connect a whole bunch of devices together. There's an app component. There are, of course, lots of connected devices, and the part I'm responsible for is the cloud part. And I've got this great team here. One of the coolest things about working for a startup like us is that we're kind of inventing stuff as we go, and that means that we have a certain amount of flexibility in the technologies that we adopt, and we can do so very quickly. And so I feel like I work at the toy store. I mean, we just have new stuff going on all the time. So we're excited about the Docker stuff that's been going on. We're kind of getting our feet wet in some parts of it. We've really dove in other parts of it, so I'm excited to talk about that. My background, I came to Revolve directly from HP Cloud, where I was steeped pretty deeply in OpenStack. I did a lot of the APaaS and PaaS work while I was there. My first big run-in with containers was as the lead on the APaaS project there. We were building a container-based solution that ran on top of virtual machines. And so I've got all this cloud background that has given me certain perspectives on some of the stuff that I find changing as I watch this industry moving at an incredibly nimble pace. So I'm one happy person. I mean, I'm like in my happy place. So
that's great. And it's really interesting because you've got the enterprise-y HP background, yet you're at a startup. So you kind of have both sides of the vision of how both enterprises and startups could use Docker. So could you tell us a little bit about how you're using Docker today at Revolve?
Yeah. So a lot of our core services were still running on full-on virtual machines. And what we've been doing is looking at what the emerging trends are cloud-wide, and Docker is, of course, pretty much at the top of the roadmap right now. Everyone on my team has played around with, half a dozen to a dozen different projects, container-based projects, many of them centered on Docker. CoreOS is a big one. Doku, however you say it, and of course Deus. The Deus guys are like down the street from us here. And we're really excited about all these things, but we haven't committed to any one yet because they've all been, kind of fending off people saying, well, we're still unstable, but we're playing around with all of those actively. Where we've really jumped in is that we are using Drone now. We've basically replaced all of the cloud's automated CI and continuous deployment stuff with Drone. And that total migration took us probably about a week and a half, and we're just thrilled with the way Drone is working out for us. To me, it's really exactly what we wanted. We were working with Jenkins. Jenkins was a nightmare to get configured to keep running, and carried an element of danger with it that you corrupt a slave and you spend the afternoon rebuilding the slave from scratch. And Drone has basically turned out to be the solution to a lot of our problems, and that's where we've first really gotten a chance at building our own Docker images that are doing exactly what we want. hosting Docker servers and virtual machines in Amazon, and we've had a lot of fun. One of the things we're very seriously looking at right now, we're doing a lot of exploration into the new Elastic Beanstalk services that Amazon is offering, because they're now allowing you to deploy Docker containers. And that, for us, looks like the right kind of middle move between having Docker and containerized applications on the back end and pushing those out into production on the front end. But again, you know, we're still exploring. We haven't made commitments on that yet, and we're kind of measuring our steps, just because we would hate to have frontline services compromised because we chose poorly.
Makes total sense. So one of the things I wanted to talk about is, about a year ago now, you wrote a very interesting article titled "Why Containers Won't Beat Virtual Machines." So I'm very, very curious. Are containers going to beat virtual machines now, a year later, or do you hold the same view, or has it changed at all?
Yeah, it was fun to read back over that article, because at the time, Docker was, 3 months old, maybe? Most of the container solutions were very new. Security people were still warning, well, this may not be terribly secure. But, while the container trajectory was still kind of down here somewhere, the virtual machine trajectory was up here, right? It had gained a lot of momentum. OpenStack was stable. Rackspace and HP and IBM and all of these big companies had entered the market full on. Amazon, of course, was running away with everything. Google had just announced their computing services. And to me, what the virtual machines were representing at that time was kind of the clear path to a stable and scalable technology. And containers were looking like a fatty kind of toy, you know. And I fully expected when I wrote that blog post that a year later we would see people's interest in containerization kind of waning, and them looking at it as something to do as maybe an alternative for running a heavier local development environment. But I really did not see coming down the pipe what's come out in CoreOS and with the PaaS layers on top, like Deus, the LibChan, and some of these awesome things that are coming out of this community, where basically the virtual machine is still going to have its place for sure. But containers are really starting to look like a compelling model for grouping together clusters of services, applications running with each component in a separate container. It's becoming a very elegant and very compelling model. And a lot of the new auto configuration stuff that I'm seeing come out, CoreOS, of course, I keep saying that over and over, CoreOS, because that's the one I've been evaluating most often. But I'm seeing it with all kinds of projects here. From the DevOps perspective, these kinds of containerized models are turning out to look like the right way of going. From the security standpoint, it's actually starting to look really compelling that I can control and shape traffic between containers very carefully. From the reliability and resilience standpoint, the ability to deploy a container and have it auto-configure into its environment in a far more elegant way than what we're seeing on the virtual machine level is really looking great. I mean, this is like DevOps panacea, right? The DevOps kingdom of glory or something like that. That we could actually run these things and not have to fret every time a node goes down that something somewhere in there is going to break. And, so a year ago, Netflix was talking about Chaos Monkey and kind of the trend that I was hoping to see really catch on in the virtual machine layer was this idea that we would test continually for the resilience of the virtual machines. And I think to some extent that sort of happened. But in the container world, that's really become sort of a core value, right? This idea that a cluster of containers should be able to self-manage, and that's what I see a lot of these technologies driving toward. That I find very, very exciting. So my complaints originally with the container model was that, as I saw it then, people were saying, look, containers are better because we can boot them faster. And when I wrote that article, I was thinking, well, yeah, sure, you can boot something faster, but does booting faster mean better overall DevOps experience? Does it mean developers are going to be more productive? Does it mean customers aren't going to experience downtime? And I did not have the foresight at the time to see what was going to happen in the container world. So I'm kind of happy to announce, you know, that I was wrong, that that I think containers really are going to be kind of the trend, and rightfully so, because I feel like the people who are focused on containers and focused on building an ecosystem of containers are focusing on the right things. So,
yeah, that makes a ton of sense. I think that a lot of your points that you came up with in the blog, the disk space and startup time aren't expensive, upgrading OS, security, these points are either being handled already, or the other thing that for me has always stood out, I think that a lot of the discussion around container and containerization has focused on those kinds of aspects, the security aspects, and I think there is some value there. But for me, the breakout feature of containers has always been the social collaborative aspect of containers. And the breakout feature of Docker is this: the Docker Hub is like it's GitHub for the DevOps community, for the ops community, to be able to collaborate together and almost start sharing knowledge, being able to share the ideas of how to put systems together, distributed large-scale systems, at a collaborative level. You know, what Git did amazingly well is take the source control stuff that had been done for years with CSV and Subversion and all that, and make it something globally collaborative and distributed and hook into that broader knowledge. And the GitHub has really brought out some great thinking and great collaboration. That's what I see in many ways being a cornerstone of what makes Docker so amazing, is it creates a source control for DevOps. It creates a way for us to collaborate together and share container images collaboratively. And that's, you know, aside from the security aspects, aside from the boot up speeds, that's something that I haven't seen anything touch before. And that's what excites me about Docker and containers.
Yeah, and that's kind of a funny, you've got kind of the funny Unix stereotype, right? That on the one hand, you have the developers who are learning from each other and sharing code and stuff like that, and then you've got the operators and the sysadmins who are hiding in a corner with some kind of esoteric knowledge that the rest of us don't possess, right? And that's the stereotype that I think has probably gone back a couple of decades. And what's interesting about Docker's whole concept here with the hub-style workflow is that it may turn out that the only reason that sysadmins were ever characterized like that is because there wasn't ever really a good kind of venue for sharing knowledge in this kind of way. When Juju started to get popular, I sort of started to see that happen there. But I think that this is really opening up a new world for people to be able to collaborate on, exactly as you put it, collaborate in a space where collaboration just didn't ever seem to work before, right?
Yep. Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about what you like about Docker. What do you not like about Docker?
What do I not like about Docker? Well, a week ago I would have said the perpetual putting off of a 1.0 release is my biggest concern. That got solved. That's great. And my biggest concern right now really is that a lot of the tools around it are still really nascent and immature. That's a problem that will be solved provided, you know, people continue to be interested in it, and I really think they will. That has been so far high on the radar that I haven't even really looked too much deeper to see what the other big concerns are going to be. The way my team works, our particular workflow has been centered around Docker files, and it feels like every time I find something that we can't quite do, another version comes out and we seem to be a little bit farther down the road. And I feel like the kinds of needs people like my team have are the kinds of needs that many teams have. And so I'm very optimistic that those small kinds of things are going to get solved.
Yeah, so on a big level, the stability and the kind of we're not going to break things of 1.0 was something you guys needed. But from a technical level, what do you think was the biggest problem for real life adoption of Docker for companies like yourself, for companies bigger enterprises? Is there something technical that you think is kind of a sore thumb?
The biggest thing, the one thing that I'm really looking forward to someone solving for us is that right now, if I want to deploy Docker into a production environment, I am back to virtual machines if I want, you know, if I want one of the bigger clouds, right? Even with Amazon Elastic Beanstalk, Amazon, in my mind, is kind of the biggest player that's really, although Google now, too, has just announced that they're going to support Docker containers. But the way that they're supported leaves me kind of wondering, are we really getting all we can get out of containers? And I feel like there's big space for someone to really, really solve well the public cloud version of Docker containers, right? We've got OpenStack, we've got Amazon, we've got Google, we've got all these solutions for virtual machine-based ones. But it feels like we're still kind of stuck at the PaaS layer if we want a fairly robust Docker environment. And once we're at the PaaS layer, we're really one layer too high to do a lot of the DevOps stuff that that a largish or even a medium-sized installation will want to be able to accomplish. And, you know, we've backed off our usage of PaaS-style frameworks just because we wanted to be able to step down a little bit and manage more effectively what we were doing with our resources, how we were compiling things, what the environment was like. Docker provides us that, but we can't deploy it the way we really want to deploy it into a public cloud. So one of my biggest reservations the first time someone on my team said, hey, let's just switch to Docker was, well, I don't want to do that because that means that I have to manage virtual machines, and then I have to manage Docker containers on top of virtual machines. If there's a way to make it so that I don't have to manage the virtual machines, you know, ideally they wouldn't even be there or would be somewhere where I don't have to know about them. I think that that's a big opportunity that would meet a company like Revolve where we're kind of looking. We don't want the high-level PaaS. We don't want to manage multiple tiers of infrastructure. We want what feels like the natural bottom layer of infrastructure, and we don't really care what's hidden beneath that.
Yeah, this is exactly the sort of thing that CenturyLink and CenturyLink Cloud are thinking about. That's why I spend a lot of time in this space. So as a Docker user, were you aware of the stuff that was going on in this week's announcement for LibSwarm and LibChan and some of the new open source projects? Are you appraised of what's going on? Do you understand what it is, and are you excited about it?
Yeah, I've kind of, like many observers from a distance, we've been kind of looking at things to see how they pan out. Revolve has made a pretty big commitment to Go at this point, to the Go programming language, and a lot of these new libraries, or a lot of these new technologies have libraries for Go. LibContainer, I think, you know, there's an example of something that where we might be able to build some really cool stuff, where before the barrier of entry in building the container wrapper would have prevented someone like me from investing the time because I have other things to accomplish, right? So I was pretty excited about LibContainer. I could be the only one, but I'm really excited about that one. As far as any kind of real-time messaging and message queuing systems, Revolve, you know, in doing any kind of Internet of Things stuff, real-time interaction is a very important aspect of this, right? For example, you've got light switches. You don't want to have outlets and light switches that take 3 to 5 seconds to turn on from when you press the button on your mobile app or whatever. And so seeing LibChan, which I feel like is really going to start propagating the Go notion of channels at a network layer, is kind of an exciting technology, and I'm looking forward to it and looking forward to seeing how it matures. So those two in particular have really kind of bubbled up to the top of our radar. LibSwarm, I'm still not sure what to make of it. I feel like I need to sit down, read about it for a while, see if it's something that's going to be usable for us or if it's something that we'll let other people make usable for us.
Cool. So you've mentioned that you're evaluating right now things like CoreOS and Deus and Doku. So can you tell us about how you're thinking about these projects. How far along have you evaluated them? I know our audience is thinking about them as well. They probably haven't had as much experience as you have. How do you go about choosing which one's right for you? And I guess, can you talk more about that thinking process?
Yeah. So with Doku, that was the first one I really started playing around with, and that was almost a year ago now. It was fairly early on in Doku's, I think, whenever Hacker News covered it. And that one was fun to just kind of play with. At that time, I was coming off the APaaS project, which is an application platform as a service that HP Cloud offers. And we've been working with a fairly robust PaaS solution. And to play around with something that was, as the, you know, the catchphrase goes, 100 lines of bash script, it was fun. And it was fun to look at, and I've played around with it two or three times since. And I like the idea of the kind of minimalist build your own PaaS. I with DZone a little while ago, I wrote an article for their cloud report about how PaaSes are kind of evolving over the last 2 years, and they've gone from this sort of the mindset that the PaaS was going to be the monolith, right? And developers would just set their code gently on the top and everything in between would be taken care of. And that was the old view of it. And there are some decent stacks that were built that way, but it's turning out that developers don't find that to be terribly satisfying once they make it past the prototype stage. And so we took a good hard look at Deus and Doku and some of the other mini PaaS or build your own PaaS sorts of solutions, and I really think they're promising. I'm excited to watch Deus mature, because it's gone from the first time I tried to install it, I think I spent hours just trying to get all the Ruby dependencies right. And it's coming along really well, and I think their decision to leverage a lot of what's going on in CoreOS has been fantastic. So kind of our plan here is we check in on it every 2 to 3 months and see how it looks. And my guess is that in 2 to 3 months from now, when we download it and start looking at it, what the question we're going to be asking isn't going to be, so how does this thing work? What exactly are its features? But is this actually ready to meet our needs now? That said, since we've started evaluating that, we've backed off a little from the PaaS layer and started to roll our own at a little bit lower level on the stack. And that's where I think CoreOS is looking really good. I feel like if CoreOS matures to the point where we can kind of reliably deliver a cluster of CoreOS servers out into the cloud and then use Docker and deploy into Docker, we're basically going to hit the kind of technology that Revolve is shooting for right now, which is the ability to kind of keep services segmented where they ought to be segmented, but still have a single common infrastructure that all the engineering team and all the DevOps people can feel comfortable using. So CoreOS to me really represents, again, that step down. And I'm looking for that layer right there, somewhere between having to manage a bunch of virtual machines and then another layer on top, but short of running on top of the monolith where all I have to do is set the code on top and hope that everything down the stack auto-configures for me. So probably the next time we go through our evaluation cycle in 2 to 3 months, we will, again, take a look at the PaaS layer, but we will probably focus our attention on whatever is really maturing out of that middle tier there as a runtime for containers, a robust, scalable runtime for containers.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. We're actually working on a project at CenturyLink Labs right around that area that you might find interesting. We're going to be talking more about that soon. So you've been blogging about using Drone for CI/CD, and Drone is a Docker-based CI/CD. It's written in Go as well, and it's like a daemon. It's all packaged into one little thing. It's really easy to install. It's really cool, and it lets you do Docker-based CI/CD stuff. So I'd love to hear from somebody using it in a real life scenario. What is it, tell us about it, tell us about how it's different than using something like Travis or Circle or some other CI/CD mm-hmm. solution or Jenkins. I'd love to hear a real life use case.
Yeah, so in a nutshell, Drone works on the principle that when you push something into your Git repository, it will pull out a copy of that, start up a new image, new Docker image, and then execute whatever you tell it you want to execute on that code base in that container. And so, you know, contrast this with what I view now as the old school, which was the Jenkins school of doing CI, where even if you could wire up the first part so that all your initial checkouts and putting the code onto the slave worked, you were still running on the OS, on the slave's OS. And they've worked, of course, to try and integrate some of the Docker stuff. But what's nice about this is from the moment the drone container spins up, we know what the state of that container is. You know, it was exactly the state that we told it to spin up in when the Docker file finished, right? So we drop our code into this kind of known stable container. We can create and manipulate and compile and do whatever we want, and then have it respond by pushing out our end result, and then it destroys the whole environment. And the next time it spins up, we've got a brand new, pristine, fresh one in exactly the same state, you know, we expected it to be in, and the cycle goes on. So initially, I had kind of looked at this as a way to handle some of our automated testing. You know, we'd commit, it would spin up a copy, it would run the unit tests, it would shut itself down. Piece of cake, had that working in no time. But I kept discovering more and more things that I could do. Like, I can tell it, oh, I'm also dependent on having some other containers. I want my database in there. So now I can spin up the new container, load up the schema for my database into a separate Postgres container, and then run all my integration tests and make sure that all of that stuff is working well too. And I kept, you know, we kept experimenting and trying new things. And in the end, we've ended up with a very robust workflow where on a commit to, you know, our master branch, the Docker will spin up. It spins up with our own custom Docker image. It runs a series of pre-flight checks. It checks all the dependencies and makes sure everything's at the right version. It sets up the database. It installs a schema. It starts running through the tests. If it finishes the tests, then it starts the process of building a Debian package. It builds our Debian package and pushes it into our apt repo. Then after that, it uses Packer, which will spin up a new AMI for us, basically build us a custom AMI based on the output of that, bundle it all up and push that out to Amazon, and then start up another script that we wrote that will actually spin up virtual machines somewhere off in Amazon that we can then immediately start doing our development testing. So we basically got like an end-to-end CI/CD in no time. I mean, this was, like I said, project from beginning to end took us about a week and a half. And granted, that's because I work with, my colleagues are brilliant and could jump in here and do a lot of the esoteric stuff like building Debian packages very quickly. But that was fun, and it was interesting, and it works, and we're getting a lot of mileage out of it, and that's exactly where I wanted to be. You know, whereas how we felt with the Jenkins system was that every time we had to do anything, it was, oh, all right, I got to log into Jenkins. I've got to figure out what plugin to use, and it was a burden. Whereas with Drone, we've really been more impressed by how much we could accomplish and how close we could get to our vision in so quick a turnaround time. And, you know, as I've been talking about how what we hope to do is move off of virtual machines and onto Docker images. And Drone really, of course, is going to set us up perfectly for that. So in our end run, you know, we hope that after we build those Debian packages and push them out to our apt repo, we'll be able to just start up some new containers and have the containers run and build themselves off of a Docker file that says, hey, grab these apt packages out of this repo and get going. So what I think Drone has to offer that a lot of these other platforms, past platforms have not, really has to do with the fact that you can instantly have a very stable, workable environment. You can tweak it to your desires, right? We install our own custom packages so we don't have to keep installing at the beginning of every run. But at the same time, when I really screw something up and destroy the Postgres database, or I really screw something up and wipe out Etsy password or something in a container, which I've never done, but I could. I did one time remove /bin. But, you know, when you do stupid things like that, the test fails, the container goes away, and the next time you start back fresh. And nobody has to spend 4 hours rebuilding anything. And that really was the freeing thing that helped us really dive in and experiment with a lot of this other stuff and get things done so quickly.
Interesting. That's fascinating. So have you tried Shippable, who is also doing some Docker-related, but they're more hosted version of Docker-related CI/CD?
Yeah, I looked at them quickly, and hosted wasn't something we could do at the time, and may still be something we can't do at the time. And I do think that some of these other Docker-based CI/CD tools that are hosted are going to be very successful because they can provide this kind of tooling for people without even the hassle it took us to spin up a VM and get this running in there. But it was kind of out of scope and out of our ability to do it there right now.
Yeah. So Go seems to be one of the cool languages to build stuff in lately. You guys are working on stuff. Docker's built in Go. Drones built in Go. Can you tell us about how you got into Go? You'd been doing some Drupal stuff before. Now it's Go. What do you like about it? What do you not like about it?
Yeah, so my kind of longer-term background is I was a Java developer for 10 years. Then I switched and did some PHP and some Drupal for a while. And then when I joined Revolve, I joined again as a Java developer. And we had an existing Java API server. I've had good and bad experiences with Java, But more recently, I felt like Java development was piling on library upon library upon library so that I could do something. And our application really was starting to feel like that. And I had been playing around with Go even way back when I was at HP and over in my free time building little tools and things like that. And I was impressed with the dual facts that on one hand, I could build a remarkably powerful application just using the core libraries. And that was because they focused so much effort on getting the networking right and getting the structure of programs right. And on the other hand, the fact that it compiles well to fairly generic binaries that are small in size and use a very small amount of memory meant that I could run them on lower-powered machines, lower-powered VMs than what I was writing in Java, which took many, many times the resources. And those two things were compelling enough. But then once I really got going and realized, Rich Hickey gave a talk a couple of years ago at Strange Loop that was called Simple Made Easy. And he focuses a lot on what conceptual simplicity means. And while I know he's thinking mainly about functional programming, to me, Go really represented the elegance of simplicity. Not everything may be easy, but the stuff that's in the language feels like the stuff that ought to be in a language. And the stuff that's not in the language largely feels like stuff I can comfortably live without. And that was the sweet spot I really wanted in programming in general. I think that's really the sweet spot all of us want, right? We don't want a language where we're continually trying to learn what the core features are, nor do we want a language where we have to download 60 or 70 external libraries before we can build something like a simple functional HTTP server. And that got us going. The funny thing is, originally, I was just building a demo that was gonna power a little thing in a booth at a trade show and reinvented our cloud service in a matter of weeks and went, hey, I want to keep doing this. So it stuck, and our team pivoted very, very well, very gracefully from Java to Go, and we're all just kind of 100% Go as far as what we're planning for the future cloud projects right now. Shouldn't say that, not 100%. We have a healthy dose of side scripting languages like Python and Ruby and stuff, but for our core services, we've really pretty much committed to Go at this point. Not because we had to do it by fiat, but because the engineering team feels like it's the right language for building these kinds of tools.
Cool. Well, I really appreciate your time, and I am super curious to figure out what you guys land on in terms of that middle layer, what orchestration you picked. So I'd love to check in with you in 2 or 3 months and see where things stand, if that's okay.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. That'd be fun.
Great. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you. It's been great.